Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Imagine inventing and developing a product that will improve the lives of thousands of people. That would be an exciting and satisfying prospect. Imagine you develop two at the same time. I was lucky enough to meet and record this interview with just such a person. Danish-born innovation design engineer and now medtech entrepreneur Lisa Pape. With her Pathfinder and Pathfeel shoe accessories, she's developing products that will help Parkinson's sufferers, those with diabetes and other sensory neuropathy conditions to improve their mobility and quite probably extend their lives. We talk as we walk across Clapham Common in South London, early one sunny morning, with the background sounds of commuting traffic and groups trying to get fit. It's all about mobility and it's all about going forward and going forward with confidence. So walking with confidence as you grow older. And you call that agile aging?
I don't think I've called it that, but that sounds like a good term, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we'll be using that in future.
Okay, tell me where the initial idea came from and what the drivers were for you to pursue it.
Yes, so I started this project when I was studying at the Royal College of Art in Imperial, a joint course in innovation design engineering. I started this as my final degree project. I was interested in Parkinson's and multiple sclerosis in particular. The reason being that my father has Parkinson's, and so obviously as a close family member, you see a lot of the issues, both for him, but also, for instance, for his wife in helping him, and it really impacts a lot.
Just tell me a little bit more about what does Parkinson's, you know, how does it manifest itself?
Yes, exactly. So as part of my process, I really explored that quite extensively for both Parkinson's and MS, how it impacts in daily life. And through a lot of conversations with different people, it became apparent that mobility and voluntary and involuntary movements are a big part of the daily life. Of course, there are many other symptoms, but those were the ones where people spoke about the biggest kind of risks associated with it. For instance, if you're a young person with MS and you fall and break a leg, what's your likelihood of being able to walk after that? That's something that really impacted me, and mobility is really the key here where I want to try and make an impact. So we then went into developing two different products for two different types of very specific problems. One of them was one that my father experiences a lot, which is about freezing, which is basically the concept of walking along and then suddenly your feet are no longer following. So you want to walk, but you suddenly get frozen. And it's a fairly common symptom in Parkinson's. And I had observed how he dealt with it, being that, for instance, whoever was closest would go and put a foot in front of his, and then instantly he could step across that foot. So he was frozen, but it was possible to break it in a very simple way, which he wasn't able to replicate by just thinking about it or whatever. So I started researching that and found that the idea of kind of having a visual obstacle in some way was actually quite proven to help to trigger walking again.
So you actually create a trip hazard.
So you actually create a kind of trip hazard. In this case, I then created something which is a laser light in the form of a line to step across. It's a kind of only a visual thing, really. But essentially, these type of people walk very well on stairs, but not so well on a plain surface. So it's the kind of idea of creating this kind of rhythm and pattern and basically making it really easy to see where do I put the next, you know, the next foot to continue walking. And that's the idea of having this laser line. Essentially, the laser line is activated by pressure. So in a sense, if you have your left foot on the ground, that will shine the line for the right foot to step across. Then when your right foot hits the ground, that absorbs pressure, and then it emits a line for the left foot to step across. So they work in a kind of coordinated pattern, Which means that the line is always at the same distance from you, so you can modify it to your gait pattern, to how long your strides are.
I mean, at the moment, I'm envisaging those little lights that are light up in little girls' shoes as they run across the floor.
Yes.
Or the ones which have little roller skates in the back of them, you know, but it's much more clever than that, much more sophisticated. So this, it's affected by pressure. Is this pressure that is always the same when we're walking? Do we always put the same pressure on our feet? How does it?
Yes.
How's it triggered, or is it running all the time?
Basically, it means that when your foot is in the air, in the process of taking a step, you know, there's no laser light being emitted. You know, the laser light is emitted only when there is pressure underneath the foot. So when the shoe comes into contact with the ground, the laser light is emitted. But to be honest, the product is fairly simple. So, I mean, I think that's the beauty of it as well, that it is fairly simple. And therefore, hopefully, we can make it accessible to as many people as possible.
I'm walking along. I'm holding this recorder. Yes. I'm looking at you, and I'm looking at the recording level. And I'm keeping my eye out that I don't really step in dog shit. But really,
yes.
I'm not watching where I'm going. You are looking down.
Yes.
Although I think that's because you're thinking about what you're saying and not necessarily watching where you're going, because we're now clomping through the most tufty grass you can choose. But
yes.
So this actually means that someone who has Parkinson's or MS is always watching their feet anyway. Is that a sort of given, that that's what happens? People watch their feet where they're stepping? Or are you creating a product which means that they have to watch where they're stepping?
So the people I've worked with so far generally have a tendency to look down because they tend to be quite concerned about not falling. So there is a bit of a lack of confidence often, and therefore, you know, there is a tendency to be looking down. So I don't think that that will necessarily be a problem, but that's something that, of course, you know, doing clinical testing and user testing will show if it is or not.
How far are you along the line? You've created prototypes and you're now testing them?
Yes, exactly. So we have prototypes for both products.
Shall we talk about the other product?
Yeah, sure. Why not? The other product is an insole that provides a vibrational feedback, again, upon pressure. And it's designed for people with a condition called sensory neuropathy. And what that means is that people have lost some of their touch sensation, for instance, on the bottom of their feet. And that can be quite common, both in Parkinson's, MS, but also amongst the elderly in general, people with diabetes, people who've undergone chemotherapy. It's quite a wide-ranging group, really. But the commonality is that they cannot feel the floor properly when they walk. And you can imagine, if you cannot feel the floor underneath your foot for every step, you become quite unstable.
Certainly hesitant, you know.
Very hesitant and imbalanced. I mean, again, common for both products is that there's a big risk of falling. So that's the big kind of hazard.
Okay, so the pressure pads within the insole, what are they doing? They're sending messages to the brain then, or to the individual who's wearing the shoe, or they're sending messages to someone else, or
yeah.
Not sending any messages at all. They're tickling their toes. What's going on?
I'm wearing them right now, right, these insoles. So for me, there's pressure pads, pressure sensors. Those send a signal to a little microprocessor in the insole, and that one observes and decides then whether to switch on the vibrational feedback or not. So for the user experience, it's really all about this vibrational feedback and getting that back through the sole of the feet. The idea being then, by using vibration, you're really intensifying that natural touch sensation that you have when your foot comes into contact with the ground. Additionally, vibration has been found in some studies to have a positive effect on balance. So that's what we're aiming for as well in our clinical trials.
I mean, this sounds really fantastic stuff, and I can see that it would have wide appeal. Has anyone else approached it from this angle?
There are several products out there that are similar. There are insoles with sensors for sports, so in a sense it's similar technology, totally different application. The typical way of dealing with falls prevention is by using physiotherapy. So for instance, Age UK has been running a falls prevention program using physiotherapy, which they unfortunately have discontinued because the compliance with physiotherapy has been quite low. Actually, it's found to be about 70% non-compliance. So whilst physiotherapy as a practice can be great and can be very effective if people are not doing their exercises, it's reducing the effectiveness for sure. So that's, I think, a big concern. And for our other product, Pathfinder, which is the laser-emitting shoot, there are other products out there which project laser lines, such as canes and rollators, for instance. We're working with the university team in Holland on testing it, and they have suggested that the idea of using the cane and the rollator and stuff is actually not so effective for the user because that requires too much attentional kind of time and consideration from the user. You can imagine if you have a cane, you have to place it in a certain location, you have to make sure the angle of the laser will be correct for your next step as well. So there's a lot of considerations for just taking a step. So that's really the difference we're trying to make in making it much more intuitive and straightforward. So in a sense, completely removing the need for the user to consider, where do I put my foot? Yeah. You just put it down and the line will be there.
So what I like about what you're suggesting with, you're calling it Pathfinder,
yeah,
is that that could be working all the time and providing people that reassurance and confidence to step out. So what you're saying is that the products you're providing are extending the life of people's mobility. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's all about keeping people mobile for as long as possible and also therefore keeping independent as long as possible. The moment somebody has fallen for the first time, they're much more likely to fall again, and all of that leads to an increased likelihood of having to live in a care home, etc., etc. So by trying to prevent it from happening in the first place, you know, you're extending a lot of things, both physical and kind of social independence, mental well-being.
So it's got loads of pluses.
I would say so.
So says the inventor, but you're not alone. There are product designers from Royal College of Art.
Yes, I have colleagues. I studied with them at the Royal College of Art and Imperial, and they then joined the project a bit later. So we all have this common background of design engineering, and they then have other skills in mechanical engineering and electronics engineering, so they're doing all the prototyping.
So tell us a bit about the prototyping, and who are you testing the prototyping on?
Prototyping all takes place at our new workspace at Somerset House, which is very nice. They have all the facilities for doing things by hand. And we're testing the devices in a couple of ways. The Pathfinder, the laser-emitting shoot, is being tested with our Dutch research partners. So they've been running a pilot study, and we're looking to extend that now and also include other study partners. And for the insole, we're currently running a test collaboration with Trafford Housing Trust up near Manchester. So we're testing it there with elderly people. We're still in the process of conducting all the testing, so I don't have the final results on that yet. And then additionally, we're planning some trials with UCL, looking specifically at people with sensory neuropathy. So we're currently applying for ethics approval to conduct that.
Now, all of this takes a huge amount of time and probably quite a bit of money. So tell me a little bit about how much of a sacrifice you've made because you've now started up a new business. So perhaps you'd explain a little bit about that too.
Yes, I mean, absolutely. It takes a lot of time. And I think we're also learning how to prioritize and manage that time as we move along. In terms of funding, you're right, absolutely. It takes a lot of funding, especially because we're doing hardware. So we have to buy materials and stuff like that as well. And electronics are inherently a bit expensive. So that's a big part of it. We've been lucky to win a couple of different grants. And in addition to that, we just recently had an investment from a consortium called Health Social Innovators, which is run by a UCL business in collaboration with Johnson & Johnson and this Trafford Housing Trust that I mentioned, and another startup called Numbers for Good.
The driver really was your dad's illness.
Yes.
That caused you to start thinking about how you could create a product or a service that would enable him to be more mobile and more independent.
Yes.
But have you had an interest anyway in mobility issues before, or are you an enthusiastic walker or mountain climber or something yourself?
Yes, I mean, I've always been quite fond of exercising. I like running. I had an interest in the medical area. I studied human biology, kind of my medical science at King's, and then worked in different places, including finance, and more recently at the Danish embassy doing foreign direct investments, and that was specifically looking at life sciences and clean technologies.
And has any of that helped with your efforts to be a startup?
I think it all has helped, to be honest. Doing business development is quite closely associated with what I'm doing now, which is, for instance, you know, establishing those links to universities to help us to conduct our studies, and later down the line, looking at sales of the products, of course.
With the two products that you've talked about, are these things that the individual will purchase, or are they going to be purchased by a prescriber or a housing association, or who's your market, do you feel?
And ultimately, we would like it to be a B2B product that would be prescribed by the health service or purchased by the housing trust, as you're suggesting. Those would be the great routes to market. In the short term, we're also looking at a B2C option. We've actually had quite a lot of individual potential users contact us on the back of some of our recent media wanting to purchase them. So we're hoping to make them ready as soon as possible.
And realistically, with these prototypes and the amount of testing that you have to do,
yeah,
how far is the product from being available?
For Pathfinder, we're hoping we can make it available quite soon, like within a year. And for Pathfeel, which is the insole that vibrates, it's a bit more complex technologically, so it might be a little bit more than a year, maybe 15 months or so is the aim. But that's, of course, all subject to funding. We're currently fundraising at the moment, so we're looking for investors. We have some conversations ongoing. And
just in case one of these potential investors happens to listen to this recording,
yes,
what kinds of sums of funding are you looking for? Are you looking for tens of thousands? Are you looking for hundreds of thousands?
More in the hundreds of thousands,
yeah,
at this stage, yes. Because that will really enable us to move the product development along, to expand the team as well, which is critical to that. So everything ties together with funding and time and team members, so all these product roadmaps, you know, they can only really happen subject to the appropriate funding.
I imagine with an organization like the National Health Service,
yeah,
if you were trying to sell a product to them, there's a huge gateway of...
Absolutely.
You have to evidence proven and tested,
yes,
et cetera,
Yeah, I mean, that's another reason we want to make the product available to consumers first. Because, yes, I mean...
And then they'll be able to put the pressure on their local GP or whatever and say, you should,
exactly,
be buying this product for,
exactly,
others.
So you can go at it from different angles to try and influence the likes of the NHS. But, yes, for the NHS to take up a new product, it will probably take some time and a lot of conversations.
Have you started those conversations already, or are they coming to you now?
We've started those conversations, and that's another reason why we're really keen to get these clinical trials completed so that we have an actual result. You know, it's really important for us to be able to say that it helps by X amount, because otherwise we cannot quantify it. Yeah, so for the NHS, it will be really important to be able to estimate, you know, what kind of cost saving that it can lead to. Falls, of course, are a huge spend for the NHS. They spend about £5 million every day.
Wow.
On falls.
Every day?
Every,
okay,
day.
Okay.
So, you know, if you can impact it even...
And that's not just the NHS, actually, because I imagine if someone has a fall in the public realm...
Yeah.
They sue the local authority. So
I'm sure, but this cost is only NHS, so
yeah,
whatever
so,
is
so
by
it's even
other
greater,
people...
Even greater.
It's even greater.
So you're saying it's being tested in Holland, and you're Danish...
Yes.
And it's happening in London. I mean, apart from the fact that you went to the Royal College of Art, is there any reason why you want to be in London?
So I've been in London since 2001. I did my first degree at King's here too, so I'm fairly based here. I still have very strong links to Denmark, also because of my work at the embassy here in London. So I'm not really excluding any work taking place in either location. But for the time being, I have most of my networks here in London. And I do think London is quite a great place at the moment for being a startup. there's a lot of support available, and there's a lot of other startups, so you're not quite alone in that.
Usually what I do is I ask my interviewee to recommend a couple of walks. Do you have a favourite walk? Maybe one that you do locally, or where have you been testing your insoles? Have you been specifically walking up and down the escalator on the tube or something?
I've been cycling, actually. I cycle usually. But in terms of a walk, there's a route that I normally run, and it's, I think, could be very nice as a walk too. So I've been living in Soho, and from there I would run up to Regent's Park, through Regent's Park and up to the top of Primrose Hill, which is a beautiful route, actually. And, you know, you end up with this view at Primrose Hill. So I can imagine if you take that as a walk, have a little picnic and then go back, that would be a nice way to spend an afternoon.
It just purely by happenstance, someone gets to listen to this recording or they read about something you're doing in the magazines or the papers, on the internet. How do they get hold of you?
So, if somebody wants to get in touch, they can either get in touch over email or over the phone. My email is lise@walkwithpath.com. Yeah, so they'd be very welcome to get in touch that way. We also have a website, which is walkwithpath.com, and there's also a form there to fill to get in touch. So either way works.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Lisa Pape. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.